You want to do some podcasting, Jay?
Oh my God, I thought you would never ask.
King Arthur loved cuckolds. The dude was bigger than a giant.
Solid. That's a thing I need to know.
Yeah.
I am the god of this forest, and I will flex.
Welcome to My Medieval Mayhem, the podcast where we discuss medieval literature, history, and medievalism. I'm Marcel Losada, resident medieval scholar, and this is Jan Michael Losada, resident lover of things medieval, things in film, holograms, and artificial intelligence.
Oh yeah, all the big tech things, you know, and I like the medieval times as a concept, but I don't think I could ever live there. I think the media alone would bore me.
Yeah, fair. You know, what's good about that is you don't have to, Jan.
Yeah,
you
true,
know,
true.
It is
I don't
long
think
gone.
I could.
Yeah.
Even if I wanted to, I don't think that's an option.
I think you could, but it would largely depend on, I mean, I
Are
don't
you
know.
telling me you know how to time travel?
I'm telling you, it is very varied throughout the year. So there's times where it would have been really nice. And there's times where it would have been not so nice. So there you go, man. I don't know, man. People were living their lives back then too. You know, some ways we would have been a lot more similar than separate.
But I really like the internet. I'm a
Okay.
pretty big fan of them internet.
Yeah, they did not have the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, and I mean, it was the good old days of had to walk up to somebody.
I
Yeah.
probably would have been bored of it by day three.
Yeah.
Real cool the first few days, but after that, fuck.
Yeah. And well, there'd be a lot of animals, a lot more animals. So
Yeah, I have two cats. I'm pretty good.
okay.
I'm
Fair.
pretty okay.
All right. Let's see here. So this, by the way, is a podcast where we bring you a love of medieval stories and stuff in general. We have a medieval topic that we've been covering for a while now, which is Percival, the Story of the Grail, translated by Nigel Bryant. It's a great translation. Love the book. And so, Jan, as usual on our multi-part adventures here, can you summarize the story that we've gotten so far in one sentence?
Goodness, this is getting harder by the day.
Yep.
Boy leaves home.
Okay.
Becomes knight of King Arthur's round table. Something about the Fisher King.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's not bad.
Boy doesn't have the grail yet.
Nope.
That's about it.
And then if you remember, we kind of lost track of Boy, and now we're at Sir Gawain.
That's right. We've completely done a character shift. I totally forgot about that. That's right. The
Yep.
camera panned over, and now we're with this much more famous knight. I guess famous to me, but
yeah, Sir Gawain or Sir Gawain, whatever you want to call him, but he's the guy that we're sticking with for now, because there was a challenge issued by a loathly lady at the King Arthur's court. The challenge was to go get these kings of Escavalon and Mount Dolores. You know, essentially, you know, if you, it's the baddest place that you can go. But anyway, Gawain goes out. He's got this tournament to fight.
That's
that he
right.
kind of
That's
gets embroiled
right.
in. There's two sisters. One is really hung up on one knight. His name is Meliant. I'm only mentioning that Meliant de Lis because he comes into the story in a second.
Okay, sure, of course.
And then the other sister likes Gawain, thinks he's much more handsome of a knight. They fight, and she just recently asked Gawain if he would defend her honor in the tournament.
Side questing through and through. I love it. All right. Sir Gawain, the man of the hour for some reason. Great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he is gonna agree to this, and here we go. You ready?
Oh, born ready.
Then truly, said Sir Gawain, it would be base of me not to find out what she wants. And turning straight to her, he said, tell me, my sweet and gentle child, how can I make amends for you against your sister? Sir, just for tomorrow, take part in the tournament for my sake, please. Tell me now, have you ever made a request of a knight before? No, indeed, sir. Take no notice, said the lord, of anything she says. Don't listen to her foolishness. But Sir Gawain said to him, no, sir, God help me. She's a young girl and has spoken finely in her childish way, and I shan't refuse her plea. Since it's her wish, tomorrow I'll be her knight for a while. Oh, thank you, my good dear sir, she cried, so overjoyed that she bowed right down to his feet.
I like how Sir Gawain's given himself an exit. He's like, I'll be your knight for a while. What is a while? I'm a little noncommittal, you know.
Yeah, we're gonna see where this goes, you know. I don't know. If I get bored, I'm gonna leave. So yeah. And they left without another word. The lord carried his daughter home on the neck of his palfrey and asked her how this quarrel had arisen. She told him the truth from start to finish, saying, I was very upset because my sister kept saying that Melian de Lis was the finest and most handsome of them all. But I'd seen that knight down below in the meadow and couldn't help but contradict her and said that I'd seen one more handsome than Melian. So my sister called me a silly bitch and gave me a hiding.
That can't be the way it's written.
That's the way it's written here. And probably what? In the story. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I love it. I love hearing some modern sass going all the way back.
Yeah, a hiding. Hiding here, it turns out it can also mean a beating. And that's still in usage, like to tan your hide.
So I have not once in my life have I ever heard anyone, I got hide to death. Like, you know, I got the hide beat out of me. Like, no, the word beat's still in there.
Yeah, but hiding as a verb, 1809, according to M Online, is a flogging, perhaps in reference to a whip or thong made of an animal hide.
Wow.
Or of a tanning of someone's hide. Old English had hidatholian, to undergo a flogging, and hidegild as a fine paid to save one's skin from a punishment by flogging.
Okay, yeah. So they were probably trying to avoid being beat.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. So she's saying, her sister called her a silly bitch and gave her a hiding. So
okay. And gave her a beating. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Damn anyone who thought it was funny. I'd let it.
I mean, myself included. All right. Well,
I'd let both my tresses be cut clean off, much as it might spoil my looks, if it meant that my knight would topple Melian de Lis in the combat tomorrow. And tresses is, long lock of a woman's hair.
Okay.
Yeah, so she would, apparently she's got like pigtails.
Yeah, great, sure.
Yeah. That would put an end to my sister's claims. She's gone on about him so much today that she's annoyed all the ladies, but the weather can quickly turn. Dear daughter, said the worthy lord, I permit you and command you to send him out of courtesy some token, a sleeve or a wimple. And we talked about the wimple. It's like head covering.
Sure. And so sleeves and wimples, they're not vest people.
No, they're really not, right? Yeah. And she, in her modesty, said, gladly, since you say so, but my sleeves are so small that I wouldn't dare to send them to him. No, if I sent him one, he might not think much of it at all. Leave it to me.
What are we doing right now?
Okay. I guess they're not as much material. Like, she has like shitty sleeves.
Sure. Yeah. Great. What? Yep. All right.
Leave it to me, my daughter, said the lord. I'll see to it. Don't worry. So saying, he carried her home, fondly hugging and kissing her until he arrived at his palace. But when the other daughter saw him coming with her sister in his arms, her heart was filled with anger, and she said, sir, where has my sister been? The girl with the little sleeves. She's full of tricks and ruses.
I like how she's just known for them.
She's a little sleeve girl. Yeah. She may be young, but she's learned them fast. Where did you fetch her from? What does it matter to you? He replied. Just you be quiet. She's worth a great deal more than you, who pulled her hair and beaten her, which grieves me. You've acted most unworthily.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Fair.
Her father's reproach and reprimand left her quite dumbfounded. And he called for a piece of red samite to be brought from one of his chests. So samite is a rich medieval silk fabric interwoven with gold or silver.
Okay, so treasure, like
pretty much
textbook treasure.
And had it cut and made into a long, wide sleeve. Then he called his younger daughter to him. "Daughter," he said, "get up tomorrow morning and go to the knight before he sets out. You're to give him this new sleeve as a token of love, and he'll wear it when he goes to the tournament."
How have sleeves become the main character of this? There's no Holy Grail in sight. We've mentioned sleeves like 30 times in the last 2 minutes. When did we take the sleeve turn?
Yep, and it's not a magical item in D&D, so I'm really doubting not at the all. Legitimacy here. And she told her father that as soon as she saw daybreak, she would be awake and washed and dressed. With that, her father left. The girl, filled with joy, begged all her companions not to let her sleep long in the morning, but to wake her as soon as they saw the sunrise if they wanted her to be their friend. They did so most faithfully, for in the early morning, as soon as they saw dawn break, they made her get up and dress. So the girl was up early, and off she went all alone to Sir Gawain's lodging. But she was not so early as to arrive before they had all risen and gone to church to hear mass song.
Of course, good, proper people. Yeah. I also like how she couldn't just wake up early. Like, the fucking rich folk, man, they need... No. You need to wake me up early or we won't be friends.
Yeah, this is a day before alarms and things, you know, so... I don't know.
So how are those people waking up?
Take shifts? Maybe. I'm really not sure, if I'm being honest.
I don't know.
They stay up all night? I don't know.
That's what I'm just saying.
You got the day sleeper and the night sleeper.
Pushing those chores shifts around is...
Well,
I'd have some cash for that.
Takes people. We can look into medieval concepts of time too. It's pretty fascinating. So, and how time has changed. Yeah,
sure.
So, I mean, there's the obvious day and night signal, right? So, but there's considerable nuance throughout Europe at this time, and different methods and stuff for telling time, or what time means, even.
Sure.
Or even calendars. It's really confusing if you're trying to trade. The girl stayed at the vassal's house until they had prayed for a long while and heard all they should have heard. When they returned from the church, the girl jumped up to meet Sir Gawain and said, "God keep you and grant you honor today, and wear this sleeve I have here as a mark of my love." "Willingly and thank you, friend," said Sir Gawain. Then the knights donned their arms without delay and gathered armed outside the town. The girls and all the ladies of the castle went up and lined the walls again, and watched the bands of strong, courageous knights assemble. Meliante Lee charged ahead of them all against the opposing line, leaving his companions way behind. And when the elder daughter saw her beloved, she could not hold her tongue, but cried, "Ladies, here comes a renowned lord of all knights." Sir Gawain came at him as fast as his horse could go.
Okay, so it's Gawain v... Mercy
Melion.
Melion. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got both the favored knights going against each other. There's a line of dudes charging behind them too. And it's happening in front of the town. They're on a tower watching this.
Yep.
Or a wall.
Yep.
All right.
And Melion did not fear him, but shattered his lance utterly as he struck him. And Sir Gawain returned such a terrible blow that he brought him crashing headfirst to the earth. Then he reached out for Meliant's horse and took it by the bridle and gave it to a boy, telling him to go to the one for whom he was fighting and to tell her that he had sent her first treasure he had won that day, for he wanted her to have it. And the boy led the horse, complete with its saddle, to the girl, who from a window of the tower had a perfect view of Meliante Lee's fall. And she said,
"So Gawain has taken Meliant's horse."
Yep. After saddling him,
Which, by the way, that's like the third time we've gotten that basic same description. So the first time we had a lance fight, pretty sweet. By now, the choreography is just identical. It's the same bag. Yeah.
It's actually the same scene if you look closely. Yeah.
Sister,
now you can see Melion de Lee, whose praises you were singing, flat on the ground. To anyone with an eye for truth, what I said yesterday is clear. Now, God save me, you can see there's one of greater worth than he. She deliberately taunted her sister until she drove her wild. "Hold your tongue, you bitch," she cried. "If I hear another word from you today, I'll give you such a hiding that you'll not have a leg to stand on." "Shame on you, sister," cried the younger. "Remember, God, just because I've told the truth, you've no right to hit me." "In faith, I saw him well and truly topple him, and so did you, as clearly as I. I don't think he's got the strength to get up again. I'd say it even if it killed you, for there's not a lady here who didn't see him with his legs in the air and then flat on his back." Her sister would have slapped her if she had had the chance, but the ladies in her company would not let her hit her. Just then they saw the squire coming, leading Meliant's horse by the bridle. He found the girl sitting at a window and presented the horse to her. She thanked him more than 60 times and bade that the horse be taken for her, and the squire went to convey her thanks to Gawain, who seemed to be the lord and master of the tournament. For there was no knight, however brilliant, who could face Sir Gawain's lance and keep his stirrups. Never had he been so keen to win horses, and he made presents of 4 that day, won by his own hand.
He got four. He bagged 4 horses,
mm-hmm.
and probably didn't kill anyone, or they would have mentioned that, or...
Yeah, I don't think so. It's a tournament, Yeah, sure. But that doesn't stop.
You went
Percival
non-lethal. Yeah, I was about to say.
That's right.
Gawain seems a lot more tempered than Percival. Percival's just a killing machine.
That's right. Yeah. So he sent the first to the young girl. With the second, he thanked Garen's wife, who was delighted with the gift. One of Garen's 2 daughters received the third, and the other had the 4th. So I don't know why they explained it that way.
Yeah, that's a hell of a way to sum up. And he gave them to his daughters. Sure. Great.
Then the tournament broke up. Oh, sad times. And Sir Gawain rode back through the gate, carrying off the prize by the agreement of both camps, though it was not yet noon when he left the combat. When Sir Gawain returned, so great a throng of knights came with him that the town was packed. They all followed him, wanting to ask and inquire who he was and of what country. He met the young girl right at the door of her house, and she did just this. She took hold of his stirrup straight away and greeted him with the words, 500,000 thanks, good sir. So
we've gone exponential growth. We've gone from 60 to 500,000.
Yeah, and we're counting, just so you know. Yeah. He knew just what she meant and replied most nobly, "I shall be gray and white with age, girl, before I fail to serve you wherever I may be. And however far I am from you, if I know that you're in need of help, nothing will stop me coming as soon as I have word." "Thank you indeed," said the girl. They were talking thus when her father arrived, and he tried with all his might to have Sir Gawain stay there that night and take his lodging. And he begged and entreated him first to tell him his name if he would. Sir Gawain declined to stay, but he told him, "My name is Gawain, sir. I've never hidden my name whenever it's been asked of me, but neither have I given it without first being asked." When the Lord heard that it was Sir Gawain, his heart was filled with joy, and he said to him, "Oh, stay, sir, accept my service tonight, for yesterday I gave you no service at all. And never in my life, I promise you, have I seen a knight whom I long so much to honor." He implored him to stay, but Sir Gawain refused all his pleas. And the little girl, who was neither wicked nor foolish, bent down and kissed his foot and commended him to God. Sir Gawain asked her what she had meant by this, and she replied that she had kissed his foot so that he would remember her wherever his feet should tread. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is kind of a lot. Yeah. Kind of a little fetishy too. And he said to her, "Have no fear, dear friend. With God's help, I shall never forget you when I'm gone." And with that, he set off, taking his leave of his host and the others, and they all commended him to God.
He's following a lot of Percival's actions of showing up, being the best at everything, and then like taking off abruptly. This seems to be the typical bag of a Knight of the Round Table. It's not uncool, like it's pretty cool, but predictable. I don't
Yeah, definitely a little predictable, right? Not a whole lot of flaws going on, but you know, we'll see. We still got some territory here to go through.
And still no Grail in sight.
Nope, no Grail. Yeah. Even though our focus has changed a little bit, so
quite a bit. Yeah, we've just sidelined into a different story.
Yeah. Sir Gawain slept that night at an abbey and was given everything he needed. Then early
So
the next
you can just go up to an abbey and be like, "Hey, do you have a room?"
I think if you're a knight, yeah.
Wow.
You can do that. Yeah. So
fringe privileges.
Yeah, I think if you're a person, maybe two, but it would depend more. So, yeah,
how much
I'd
do
have to
you
look
need
into
it?
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, early the next morning, he took to the road again until, as he rode along, he saw deer grazing at the edge of a forest. He told Evenette, who was leading one of the horses, the finest, and holding a stout and mighty lance, to stop and to bring him the lance, and to tighten the saddle girths of the horse he was leading, and to bring him the horse in place of his palfrey. So it's kind of a lot.
A lot of description of horses. I hate that we don't get descriptions of battle, but we get get the word sleeve used a dozen times in a minute. We get like horse description. This is what people of the time were all about. Fucking
yeah
horses.
yeah and definitely not combat, as we've noticed,
Yeah.
because our narrator just skips it most of the time. Let's see here. The squire did not hesitate, but gave him the horse and the lance without delay. Gawain set out after the hinds, hinds are deer, right?
Yeah.
And chased him with such trickery and guile that he trapped a white one against a thorn bush, laying his lance across her neck. But the hind leapt like a stag and escaped from him. And he leapt after her and pursued her and was just about to stop her and catch her when his horse completely lost the shoe from a front hoof. Sir Gawain, feeling his horse stumble beneath him, was much put out and set off back to his baggage train. He could not think what was making him limp unless he had caught his hoof on a tree stump. He called to Evenette to dismount and to take care of his horse, who was limping heavily. He did as commanded and immediately lifted a hoof and found the shoe missing and said, "He needs to be shod, sir. We'll just have to lead him gently until we find a smith who can fit a new shoe." They journeyed on until they caught sight of people coming out of a castle and along a road. At the front were short-coated people, boys on foot with dogs
okay,
on
wait,
leashes.
whoa, whoa,
Yeah.
whoa, whoa. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I don't
Okay.
trust these ones. Yeah.
Once again, we're describing people based on the weirdest articles of clothing. So they are short-coated. Their coats are like waist cut, I would imagine.
I think so. You know, medieval.
And most other people have like knee cuts, or
I'm guessing. Or does this mean like short, like rib length? You know how those
do they all have short shorts on? How should I envision
I mean,
this?
Some of these are Germans, so maybe.
Maybe, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So Gawain and his train.
Yeah,
So I
so
imagine
that's the other part, right? He's got a baggage train.
Yeah, for sure. No, and
with like people.
This goes from being such a like badass cowboy tale of a guy like guiding his horse on a journey to how many people do you need before you refer to it as a train? Like,
Right.
what is the bare minimum? This isn't just a dude or two. This isn't a Sherpa and him or a squire and him. This is like a village in tow. I was surprised they couldn't just patch the horse up there on the road. If you've got a train of people.
Right. Yeah. Right. You don't have a forge traveling
like,
with you. Yeah.
how big would trains be typically? What? How many folk should I be envisioning traveling with Gawain here?
Well, I think it would depend, but you know, if it's a full lord taking off, you know, in this case, it seems like he might be by himself, but it's everything that would sustain him and then the servants that are going with him. So maybe a couple
Fuck,
of carriages,
so they
you
need
know,
help.
several horses, you know,
okay,
different people to procure different, you know, if he's got a tent and stuff. So I'd say maybe, you know, anywhere from 6 to a dozen, probably.
Wow. So he's got his retinue with
him. A farrier, somebody to take care of the horses when they're done, somebody to feed them, alternate them, because you know you got your war horse and then your palfrey to travel.
Yeah, of course, sure.
You know, and you can change those out too if he's riding up ahead and can come back, you know.
God, must be nice. Okay, so him and anywhere from a half a dozen to a full dozen dudes are traveling along, and they see a castle and short-coated people. Yeah, I am picturing matadors, front. By the way. That is now how I'm choosing to picture this. cut off right under the armpit. Yep,
exactly. Yeah. That could be the short coat. I don't know.
That's as short as it goes.
That is, before it's not a coat anymore, right? Yeah. I don't know what it is, but yeah. Boys on foot with dogs on leashes, followed by huntsmen carrying bows and arrows, and last of all came knights. At the rear of all the knights were two on chargers, one of whom was a young man, and the most striking and most handsome of them all. He alone...
What were the others? If one of them was a young man, were there...
I don't know. Old men?
I can't imagine there were women about... Were some of them probably children?
Probably not. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, probably not, too. So I think it's just that one of them was the most striking and most handsome.
Sure.
Which makes sense. He alone greeted Sir Gawain and took him by the hand, saying, "Sir, let me detain you a while. Go the way I've come and dismount at my house. It's high time you found lodging, and if you've no objection, I have a most courteous sister who will make you very welcome. This gentleman beside me, sir, will take you there."
Is this guy like working his daughter or his sister out? Like, okay.
Yeah, it feels a little.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, a little bit. Then he said, "Dear friend, I'm sending you with this gentleman to escort him to my sister. Greet her first, and then tell her that I bid her by the love and faith that we rightly share, that if she ever loved a knight, she should love this one and hold him dear."
Jesus.
And do it.
Yeah. They just met.
Yep.
He's just met this person.
Yep. "And do as much for him as she would for me, her brother. And give him all the pleasure and company he wishes until we return. And when she's received him graciously, make haste and follow us, for I want to return and keep him company as soon as I can."
What? So everyone's just got a crush on this. You know, Gawain and Percival have like such similar stories that I'm starting to think this is Percival. We haven't changed characters at all.
He's going to take his mask off at any time.
At any moment, just reveal, "Oh, I've been the same guy. None of this matters." It is just difficult to deal with a character who just has everything handed to him the moment he enters anywhere.
All the time. Yep.
All the time. It's just always winning. Always winning.
With that, the knight set off, and Sir Gawain was led to where he was mortally hated by everyone, but he was not recognized, for he had never been seen there before, so he did not know he was in danger. Yeah, that's a curveball, right?
Right?
There is no lead up to that. It literally turns that hard that fast.
So he just... Okay, continue.
He noted the castle's fine position, overlooking an arm of the sea, and saw the walls and the tower so strong that it feared nothing. Then he saw the town, peopled by most handsome folk, and the money changers' tables piled high with gold and silver and other coins. And that's an interesting thing to pause on, because this also kind of points out to the regionality, right? Like, where do you need money changers?
On the coast, sure.
Yeah.
Like, in a place where where a lot of culture, a trade position,
exactly,
where a lot of cultures meet. Sure.
So that's an interesting note of exoticness and travel, right? Like, so this is a big spot, but it also shows that people knew about these kind of places and what money changers are, you know. So money changers tables piled high with gold and silver and other coins, and the squares and thoroughfares filled with skilled workmen of varied crafts indeed. One made helmets, and another made hauberks. One saddles, another blazons. Do you know what a blazon is?
No.
I'm going to look this up. I know what blazon means. So
I know what blazing means. I believe 420 just passed. We were ablazing then.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is B-L-A-Z-O-N.
Oh, blaze on. Oh, yeah, you can the say French that version of getting high.
Yeah. So essentially they're old times. It means armorial bearings. So, or a coat of arms. So okay. It could be like a shield.
Sure, like a pattern on top of the shield.
Right, or it could be that itself. So I don't know if it means like the shield itself or the people that put the patterns, the coat of arms, right? Which is what it means these days.
Okay, okay. So Gowan has been taken in by a knight of the town, told my sister's going to set you up. And then the narrator just gave us that he is hated in this town.
Uh-huh.
They don't know who he, they don't know him by sight.
Nope.
And he doesn't know he's hated here. And now he's looking out and he's seeing a Baldur's Gate 3 style marketplace.
Yep.
Like a vendor for everything you need separated in little, yeah, love it. Love it. Old kooky corral of characters. Great. Great.
This one bridles and that one spurs, some furbished swords, some fold cloth, while others wove it and others combed it and others sheared it.
Huh.
Some melted down gold and silver, others worked them into rich and handsome goods, cups, goblets, and bowls, enameled jewelry, rings, and belts and buckles. One might well have thought there was a fair in the town every day.
It's a Renaissance fair. Yeah.
It's exactly what it is. Yep. Brimming as it was with so many riches, wax and pepper. Let's stop with those two.
Bro, you got pepper? You got pep up in this dog?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So pepper, really big deal in the early Middle Ages, the ancient times, certainly. It was even currency at some points. Like you could trade with it across cultures. Some people say that it was used as a preservative. There is no real proof of that, but it does make food taste better. And there is a lot of proof of that. So, you know, it was during the Middle Ages. At this time, it wouldn't have been, used as currency, but it definitely would have been really valuable, you know, and having a lot of it would have been, you know, worth probably its weight in gold. It's a light thing, you know, but the average medieval person in around Troia, by the way, in this area, could afford one peppercorn a day. So as a peasant, so you could have one grain of pepper and mash that up and put that in some of your food and it wouldn't be so awful because most of your diet's vegetarian unless you're ritzy anyway.
Yeah. But that's like, that's grim. That's like saying, bro, that's like saying you could have a single rice a day, right?
I could have more rice, actually.
I burn pepper.
Well, not rice. That's kind of niche.
Oh, man. Next time I am grinding my pepper out, I'm just going to think about all the medieval peasants. I'm living better than.
Oh, dude, they would have. You would have blown that. You could go to the market and get the amount of pepper. You know, it would have made cooks weep, you know, like just the spices that we have.
Yeah,
you know,
that's why I'm saying I couldn't time travel back then because everything sucks unless you're rich.
You become the guys that popularizes it way ahead of time, right?
Okay, so go back with some Back to the Future 2 mentality.
Exactly. Yep. We're gonna be Biff.
Yeah.
Except with
probably
better,
it would probably knowing
slightly
knowing
better
my
models.
Luck, it would end poorly anyway. I cut it. So
I mean, I think they're pretty xenophobic people back then. So chances are you not speaking the language and knowing nothing of how to do any of their work. Like
how were they about tattoos? I don't think.
Fair number of tattoos. I mean, with that kind of detail, be a wizard.
That's a whole deep dive we should do at some point. Medieval tattoos. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Pretty common. They go back to Roman times. I know that. Maybe earlier. Yeah. So, yeah, we could definitely do that. But, yeah, I'll add that to the list. Wax. Wax is another one. Candles are made of wax.
Yeah, of course.
So beeswax is a big thing. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's widely traded. People make a lot of religious things out of wax too, like charms and stuff.
People do a lot of things with religion, but sure, great. Yeah. All right.
So that's one of them. But wax is like super valuable and it's exported from England. This also kind of tells you where they're at. They're at a crossroads of kind of East and West, right?
Sure.
So wax and pepper and grain and furs and every kind of merchandise. So I like how they just, you know, tell you, well, all everything.
Anything you want. It's a Walmart.
Sure. Right. Yeah, pretty much. They rode on, gazing at all these things and looking all around until they came to the tower, where boys came out to take charge of the horses and the other gear. The knight entered the tower alone with Sir Gawain and led him by the hand to the girl's chamber and said to her, "Dear friend, your brother sends you greetings and commands that this knight be served and honored. And don't do so grudgingly, but with as much goodwill as if you were his sister and he were your brother. Be sure you're not mean with whatever he wants, but generous, liberal, and kind-hearted. Oh. See to it now, for I must go. I have to follow your brother to the wood." And the girl, filled with joy, said, "Bless him for sending me such company. To lend me such a fair companion shows how much he loves me. I thank him dearly. Come and sit beside me, good sir."
I mean, and she's just into it. Mm-hmm. And all right, must be speed dating in the medieval times. Go.
Yep. "Seeing how fair and noble you are, and because my brother has bidden me, I'll give you sweet entertainment."
Okay, great. This is going in a all right, go on.
The knight stayed no longer, but set off. Sir Gawain had no complaint at being left alone with the girl, who was most courteous and beautiful, and so well brought up that she knew no one would send a chaperone, even though she was alone with him. They both talked of love. If they had talked of anything else, what a waste of breath it would have been. That's the narrator, I guess.
All right, cool. Yep. I mean, I'm liking this. They're having a weird romance. This seems to be your job, right? It seems like every time a nice knight comes into town, they've got an arrangement going. I'm waiting for the bait and switch. I'm waiting for the, when his guard's down, you know, the wallet gets lifted. Or they just have a pleasant time.
Let's find out. Yeah, you're starting to get the whole medieval thing. Yeah, that's good. Your expectations have shifted.
Oh, yeah.
Sir Gawain sought and begged for her love and said he would be her knight all his life. And she did not refuse, but granted it most willingly. But just then, a vassal entered who was to cause them great harm. He recognized Sir Gawain, and when he found them kissing and reveling, he could not hold his tongue, but cried at the top of his voice, "Damn you, woman! God destroy and confound you, letting yourself be kissed and caressed by the man you ought to hate most in all the world. Wretched and foolish woman, how typical this is of you. You should have stolen his heart with your hands, not your lips. If you're kissed..."
Yeah. What does that imply? Okay.
"If your kisses have reached his heart, then you've drawn it from his breast. But you'd have done better if you'd ripped it out with your hands."
So attack him. And so, okay. I follow. Yeah, sure.
"There's no good in a woman. A woman's not a woman if she despises evil and loves good."
Okay. A lot of opinions flying right now. Yeah. Sure. Okay.
"It would be wrong to call her a woman then. She loses that name if she loves only good, but you're a woman. I can see that."
Okay. Yeah, we get it, bud. You're misogynistic. We get it. Yeah. We understand. All right. So
For the man sitting beside you killed your father and you kiss him.
Bum, bum, bum. No, Sir Gawain. Why? Okay.
"When a woman's got her pleasure, she cares nothing for the rest."
this vassal.
Yeah. With that, he dashed out before Sir Gawain could say a word. Okay. And the girl, yep.
That's a pretty big speech to make while you're just sitting there. But okay, great.
And the girl fell to the floor while she lay for a long time in a faint. Sir Gawain lifted her up, most grieved and upset at her fear. And when she came to, she said, "Oh, now we're dead. Because of you, I'll die today. And so will you, I think, because of me." The people of the town will come here right away. I'm sure of it. There will soon be more than 10,000 massed outside this tower.
Whoa, how big of a fucking town is this? I guess I wasn't picturing. Okay, no, big old city bazaar. Okay, yeah. So it's a big place. Okay.
Yeah. But there are plenty of weapons in here. I'll arm you with them quickly. One worthy man.
Are we about to do this?
We're going to find out.
I hope we John Wick this. Oh.
One worthy man could defend this tower against a whole army. Then she ran, fearful, to fetch the arms. But when she had equipped him with all the armor, both she and Sir Gawain were less afraid. But as ill chance would have it, there was no shield to be had. So he took a chessboard as a shield, saying, "My love, there's no need to find me another."
Okay. Oh, so he, pretty cool, looking a little bit like a, I don't know, a Fortnite character or something. He picked up just like a chessboard.
Yeah.
And has affixed it to his arm. Bro, that's a pretty sweet, like, Elden Ring pickup. I'd have a chessboard. That's sick.
Yeah. And now you know for a fact that chess was absolutely around in the Middle Ages.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, you want to know
that was going to be my next question, which is how old is chess?
Oh, sure. So this is fun. Okay, you ready?
Hit me.
The game of chess, or rather its immediate precursor, known as Shatranj, was introduced to Europe from the Islamic sphere, most likely via Iberia, which is Spain, in the 9th or 10th century, right?
Okay.
So I had to look up Shatranj, right?
Sure.
And it's an old form of chess as played in the Sasanian Empire. Its origins are based on the Indian game.
Oh, good God. Okay.
Chaturanga.
Chaturanga? So, okay.
Yeah, which, there's a rabbit hole to go down.
So but
the bottom line is,
chess has been around for almost ever.
Yep.
And it's just been evolved over time. The DLC releases and it changes games.
Yep.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
But chess itself, chess as we know it, has been around since the 9th or 10th century, correct?
Yeah. And so we have some chess pieces that look a little different, and they were known by slightly different names. So, you know, you had, for instance, like, it wasn't a queen. It could be the vizier, or the vizier, which is, like the king's right hand man.
Okay.
You had elephants in the, Shatranj? Or I'm probably butchering that, but, elephants were the bishops, essentially. The rooks. And you had the knights were still in knights. You had a chariot. I don't know. They had pawns. So different kinds of pieces, but, you know, same rule set, same board.
Sure. Sick. Cool. Now we know. Yeah.
And he tipped the chessmen to the floor. They were made of ivory, 10 times bigger than other chess pieces and of harder bone.
How big is the board? It has to be 10 times bigger than a standard chess board. Or this changes the image in my mind of
10 times taller. It doesn't say how bigger.
So it's like a tower shield?
I don't know. Yeah.
All right.
But it's kind of cool. Yeah, I'm with you. Come what may, he now felt sure he could hold the entrance to the tower, for at his belt hung Excalibur.
Whoa, legendary item entering the battlefield. Who's got Excalibur?
Sir Gawain.
Okay, yeah, okay. First off, does King Arthur just... Oh, he loaned it out, didn't he?
I don't know. In this one, appears so, yeah. I mean, okay, Gawain's got
So he loaned it out to Sir Gawain. Just don't put any scratches on it. Here you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now he's got fucking Excalibur and a bunch of other shit on him and a chessboard for a shield.
Yep.
This is going to be sick. All right. Hit me.
The finest sword there was, which sliced through iron as though through wood. The vassal, meanwhile, had run from the tower and found an assembly of the town in session. The mayor and the aldermen, and a great mass of other citizens. Aldermen, by the way, it's Old English for alderman, which literally just means elder person, used as chief nobles presiding over shires. So in Chicago, they still are like a place they use that term still, alderman.
Alderman? Okay.
They're like a government, you know, agency, like a city council, I think, or something like that.
Huh.
And they certainly hadn't been purging themselves. They were stout and fat-bellied. The vassal came up at more than a trot, crying, "To arms, my lords! Let's go and seize the treacherous Gawain who killed my lord." "Where is he? Where is he?" they all cried. "In faith," he said, "I found that proven traitor, Gawain, in the tower, where he's taking his ease. He's fondling and kissing our lady, and she doesn't object. It pleases her, and she's only too willing." So come now. Let's go and seize him. If you can deliver him to my lord, he'll be delighted with your service. The traitor has deserved to be brought to shame, but take him alive. My lord would rather have him alive than dead, and rightly so, for a dead man fears nothing. Raise the whole town and do your duty. With that.
So a town meeting was happening. He runs in and dramatically screams, "Let's all just form a riot squad and go get him." And everyone complies. Love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah. With that, the mayor rose and all the aldermen after him. Then you would have seen a host of furious townsfolk snatching up whatever they could. Axes and halberds, a shield without straps.
I'm waiting for a pitchfork. Pitchfork, come on. Come on, pitchfork.
One grabbed a door.
Okay. I like him. That's thinking, man. Sure.
Another, a huge basket.
Not as effective, but I like where we're coming from. My guys are getting creative. We're getting, the improv game is strong. All right.
The town crier raised the cry, and all the people gathered, and the bells of the commune rang so that no one should stay behind. Even the most base-hearted souls snatched up a pitchfork.
I told you! Yep. I told you that pitchforks were cool, man! All right, great.
Or a flail, or a pick, or a club.
All acceptable big violent crowd weapons, right?
Yep.
I'm sad no one has torches yet, but you know what? Maybe it's daytime, torches, little much, yeah, it's like having red wine for lunch. Like, you don't, you don't do that. You don't do torches in the day. Okay.
Not even a pack of Lombards out to kill a slug ever made so much commotion. And that's a medieval joke that didn't age well, but.
Sure. this is, Wild Goose Chase made it. But Lombards, what, chasing a slug?
Out to kill a slug.
Out to kill a slug.
Yeah, so a couple of things here. One, the editor, Nigel Bryan, translator.
What's
says,
a Lombard? All right, the Zoom froze. Can you go back a little bit? Yeah.
Lombard. So the editor gives us a note. This is from Nigel Bryan, that the comment itself is a passing jib, right, at the Lombards for their proverbial cowardice. So the Lombards themselves were a Germanic people who conquered most of the Italian peninsula between 568 and 774.
So they're known as being cowards?
Yeah, kind of like at this moment. You know, they kind of got pressured by other Germanic crowds to one side, and then they had the Byzantine Empire to the other. They essentially just got eaten away by kind of war and just pressure from two sides after they overextended themselves. But sure. At the time, they're there. But here, they're, I guess, known as cowardly. It's kind of like how we talk shit about the French.
The French, right? Even though, you know, you go back 150 years and the French are the scariest people out there. Sure.
Right. Yeah, sure. Exactly.
Okay, great.
Even the most wretched rogues came rushing, carrying some weapon. Sir Gawain was a dead man unless God came to his aid. The girl boldly made ready to help him and cried to the mob, "Away, be off, you rabble, you mad curs, you slavish scum. What devil sent you? What are you after? What do you want? God send you constant misery. You'll never take this knight in here. They'll rather, please God, be countless of you dead and maimed. He didn't fly here or creep up secretly. My brother sent him to me as a guest and begged me to do as much for him as I would for my own brother. Do you
think? Dang, that's weird. Yeah, that's a little weird. Yeah, because I was expecting them to get married. I also still think when Gowan fights off this crowd, they're going to get married. But all right, go on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think me base for entertaining him with joy and pleasure as my brother bade?
I'm glad he's based. All right, continue. Yeah. Sorry.
No worries. Think what you like, but that's the only reason I gave him such a welcome. There was nothing foolish in my mind. That's why I'm so angry with you for shaming me like this, drawing swords upon me at the door of my chamber with no good reason. Or if you have reason, you haven't told me what it is. You've shown me the foulest disrespect. While she spoke her mind, the mob had smashed the door down with hatchets, splitting it in two. But Gowan, the doorkeeper, fought back finely. Wielding his sword, he dealt with the first man in such a way that the others were all dismayed, and no one dared go forward. They were all concerned for their own skins, all fearing for their heads. There was no one bold enough to advance. Such was their fear of the doorkeeper. No one raised a hand against him or went forward a single step.
So he is pulling the same strategy I pull in most, like fighter type RPG video games, mm-hmm. where you can just trick your AI opponent to make poor decisions around a door, and you can just defend that spot because you, instead of fighting 10 people at once, you funnel them down so that you're just going up against one a pop. So Gowan is just standing there, like, doing little pop shots around a door.
Yep.
Sick. Okay, great.
The girl took the chessmen that were lying on the flagged floor and hurled them. Yeah.
Okay, go on.
And hurled them at the mob in fury.
And they're made of ivory, so they're going to hurt.
Yep. She tore wildly at her clothes, swearing in her rage that before she died, she would have all the rabble destroyed if she could.
Okay, cool. So she's just having an episode. He's playing door guard. Great.
The mob drew back, declaring that they would bring the tower down on top of them if they did not surrender. But they put up an even fiercer defense, bombarding them with the ivory chessmen. Most of the mob fled, unable to endure the assault, and started undermining the tower with steel picks, aiming to bring it down, for they did not dare to attack and fight at the door that was held so well against them. And believe me, one worthy man could hold and defend it well, for the doorway was so low and narrow that two men could barely have entered together. And you could not ask for a finer doorman than Gowan for splitting the heads of unarmed men right down to the teeth and scattering their brains.
Jeez. All right. Sick. Cool.
Yeah. It's interesting how it doesn't give you much for battle, but boy, does it give you some descriptions sometimes.
Yeah. As far as the whole, like, it is ungodly to tell gory details, they're doing that thing that, like, oh, but we'll give you a little bit of gore. So no one has a crossbow. No one has any ranged weapons. They're all just great. Sure. Sure. Yep.
The lord who had given him lodging knew nothing of all this, but he was now returning speedily from the wood where he had been hunting, and still the mob were working away at the tower with their steel picks. It was then that Guigan Bressel, who knew nothing of this adventure, came galloping into the castle and was astounded at hearing the commotion and hammering of the mob.
Guigan Bressel one more time?
Yeah, so Guigan Bressel...
He was in this story.
He is. He is the, what's his name? The servant, I guess, or like the head servant of the lords of Esavon, which is where they're trying to go to defeat the big bads, I guess.
Okay.
Let me give you a little more. High steward or advisors to the kings of Escavalon. So he came earlier. He entered Arthur's court during when the the lady was telling the second time that Percival had come, and the lady tells him to go to those places. So he's again kind of related to the people we're going to defeat.
Okay, great.
Or at least, you know, Arthur wants to defeat, or the lady wants people to defeat because they're so bad. I don't know. Something sure. like that.
Sure.
Came galloping into the castle, was astounded at hearing the commotion and hammering of the mob. He had no idea that Sir Gawain was there, but when he heard the news, he forbade anyone, if he valued his life, to be so bold as to disturb a stone. But they said they would not stop because of him. They would bring the tower down on top of him too, if he were inside with Gawain. So they're going to kill him either way.
Okay. Right? Yeah, sure.
Gwygan Brassel, seeing his warning unheeded, decided to go and find the king and bring him to the riot that the townsmen had started. The king was now on his way back from the wood, and Gwygan Brassel met him and told him, by the way, really quick travel time.
Teleportation. Yeah.
Sir, your mayor and your aldermen have done you a great disgrace. They've been attacking your tower and are knocking it down. I'd be grateful indeed if you'd make them pay for it. I've charged Gawain with treason, as you know, and it's Gawain you were lodging at your house, and it's only right and proper, since you've made him your guest, to see that he comes to no harm or shame. And the king replied to Gwygan Brassel, he won't once we get there. I'm most upset and angry about this. I'm not surprised that my people hate him mortally, but if I can, I'll protect him from capture or harm, since I've given him lodging. And so they rode onto the tower and found the people on every side making a great commotion. The king told the mayor to leave and to lead the crowd away. They all moved off. Not a single one remained, since that was the mayor's wish. Now there was a vassal present, a native of the town, who, being a man of great wisdom, gave advice to the whole country. And he said to the king, sir, you need clear and honest counsel. It's no wonder that the man who committed the treason of killing your father has been besieged here, for he's rightly held in mortal hatred, as you know. But the fact that you've given him lodging should safeguard him from being seized or killed. And it must be said, Gwygan Brassel, there ought to save and protect him, for he went to King Arthur's court and charged Gawain with treachery. There can be no doubt. Yeah, go ahead.
So it's like vampire rules that because you have let him in, you cannot kill or capture him because you agreed to be cool with him. Yeah, of course, dude. Bro, remember when I fell in San Diego? That shit took me to the hospital for the same thing. And I every time I coughed, it hit. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. So your question again?
So sorry. It was that.
Oh, yes. Vampire rules.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That because.
That's the logic that's being used here. Yeah.
Okay. So that great. Okay. Sure. Love it. They have like an honor code, chivalry system. Sure.
Right. And so since this guy went over and, Gwygan Brassel had accused Gawain of, of this treachery of killing this guy's father, I guess, in the court, that's one of the things that spurs him to action and to go out here.
Sure.
That he had, he was a criminal. So that's the tie back. And then the story picks up. There can be no doubt that Gawain had come to defend himself against the charges at your court. But I advise that this battle be postponed for a year, and that Gawain should go in search of the lance whose head bleeds constantly. It can never be wiped free of a drop of blood.
I know that lance.
Yeah.
We've seen that lance over at the Fisher Kings.
That's right.
I'm paying attention. Okay.
Yeah, now we're trying to cross them together, right? He must either deliver that lance to you or surrender to such imprisonment as he's suffering here. Then you'd have a better reason for holding him captive than you have now. I don't think you could ever impose a task upon him, however hard, that he'd fail to achieve quite brilliantly. You should make those you hate suffer as much as you can. I suggest no better way of punishing your enemy. The king took the vassal's advice and went into the tower and up to his sister and found her brimming with rage. She rose to meet him, and so did Sir Gawain, who never paled or trembled for any fear. Gwygan Brassel came striding forward and greeted the girl, who certainly had changed color, and said these vain words. "Sir Gawain, Sir Gawain, because of my charge of treachery, you are under my protection, and I've arranged your safe conduct. But I told you never to be so bold as to enter any castle or city belonging to my lord, but to avoid it if you would. This is not the time or place to complain of what's been done to you." What's interesting here is, according to the editor, and I went back a little bit, but it is definitely true that this was not in their deal originally.
Okay.
So this is one of the editor kind of points out. He's uncharacteristically inconsistent here. Usually he's pretty consistent about what he says in the story. It ties together nicely.
Okay.
But the wise vassal said, "God help me, sir. All this can be sorted out. To whom should one appeal if the mob have assaulted him? The debate would go on and on until the great day of judgment. No, it shall be settled according to the will of my lord, the king. He commands through my lips that if you and Gawain don't object, you postpone this battle for a year and let Sir Gawain go. But my lord will first have an oath from him that within a year, no more, he will deliver to my lord the lance whose head sheds tears of the clearest blood. And it is written that the time will come when the whole kingdom of Logres, which was once the land of the ogres, will be destroyed by that lance."
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so you have 1 year exactly to accomplish this goal, for here, in the land of the ogres, we are quelled by only a bleeding lance. That is roughly what you just said, right?
Yeah, it's written that when the time will come, the whole kingdom of Logres, which was once the land of the ogres, will be destroyed by that lance.
Incredible. Just incredible that this was written by human beings that lived in a town. This isn't about like Moria or some, this isn't Lord of the Rings. This is supposed to be medieval Europe. Dumb question. I know this is a dumb question. I just have to ask it. Were there ogres? Were ogres a thing?
Ogres were not a thing, but
okay, just making sure, Hey,
they were a thing of legends.
Fucking everything is. It's just, you educated me yesterday, that birds have rocks in them, and I didn't know. I'm almost 40, no idea that like chickens had rocks in them, that there's a whole rock component to their life. I didn't know that. Maybe I missed somewhere along the line that there were ogres, that ogres were a thing. Yeah.
You know, the term ogre wouldn't come around for a long time. But the term of orc is pretty, pretty old.
Shut the fuck up. How old's an orc?
You're going to love this. There is a Orcos.
Pretty cool. Cool name.
He is a personified demon of oaths in ancient Greek.
Sick. Fuck yeah. Cool.
And he he inflicts punishment upon oath breakers.
Oh, that's quality demon. That's that's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Cool demon. Has a mission. Sounds cool. Oath breakers. Oh. Oh
yeah, so that's how in a doublet of orc. So there you go, man. All right, let's go here. "Truly," said Sir Gawain, "I would sooner let myself die or languish here for 7 years than swear such an oath or give him such a pledge. I'm not so afraid of dying that I wouldn't prefer to suffer death with honor than perjure myself and live in shame." "Good sir," said the vassal, "it won't be to your dishonor, and I don't think you'd be any worse for it. Let me explain why. Your oath will be to do your best to find the lance, but if you fail to bring it back, to return to imprisonment in this tower, and thus absolve yourself of the oath." "In that case," said Sir Gawain, "I'm prepared to make the promise."
Okay, sick. Yep. Acceptance of the call, sure.
Yep. Then a most precious reliquary was brought to him, and he made the vow that he would put all his efforts into searching for the bleeding lance. And reliquary is a cool term. It's kind of like a shrine. It's also a type of phylactery, which is a cool word.
Oh, wait, but phylacteries are what liches go into when they die in D&D. What is a phylactery in real life?
A container for relics.
Like a lich?
Yeah, or a lich's soul. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, lich's sick. Soul. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Postpone. Here we go. They brought the reliquary. Good. And so the battle between Gawain and Guigan Bressel was postponed for a year. He had escaped from great peril in being thus freed. Before he left the tower, he took his leave of the girl, and he told all his squires to return to this to his land and to take back all his horses except Gringalet. And so the boys left their lord and departed. I don't wish to say any more about them or the grief they showed. The story leaves Sir Gawain here and begins to tell of Percival.
Hmm.
Yeah, and Gringalet is Sir Gawain's famous horse.
Sure. Because not only is Gawain famous, but his horse.
Yeah.
Okay, great. No, I like a famous mount. I just don't.
It's his legendary mount, man.
We just don't need more horses in this tale. But it is cool that he has a legendary mount. Now. Yeah. The story's shifting back over to Percival?
Yes, indeed.
Great. What is good old Percy? What's he been up to?
Okay. Here we go with Percival. Percival, my source book tells us, and this is the author saying that, because remember, he's reading from a book that he found that has the truth.
Sure.
Had lost his memory to such a degree that he no longer remembered God. April and May passed by five times.
Wait, whoa, okay. Okay. Where did we leave Percival?
He was riding out into the woods.
So, oh, wow. Yeah, that's roughly, okay. So he's riding out into the woods.
I think he's also looking for the grail and the bleeding spear. Yeah,
sure. Mm-hmm. Yep. Even though he was already, saw them both. He was right there. Love right it. There. Great. Yep. Now we come back to him and he's forgotten God and he is just lost in the woods. All right, great.
I guess, yeah. Because it says April and May passed by five times. That's five whole years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So time marches forward. Without him entering a church or worshiping God or his cross. He lived like this for 5 years. That's not to say that he stopped seeking deeds of chivalry. He went in search of strange, hard, and terrible adventures and encountered so many that he tested himself well. In 5 years, he sent 60 worthy knights as prisoners to King Arthur's court. That was how he spent 5 years, without a thought for God.
Okay, I get it. He went like California Christian. Right, where like I'm faithful, but I don't really go to church. I haven't been to church in, you know, 5-6 years, but every now twice a decade, my mom talks me into going. Okay, so he took down 60 knights, which to him is actually a bad 5 years.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
According to his rate, he should have like thousands, tens of that. He should be a world dominator, but whatever. 5 years, 60 nights. I've never taken one night. I'm not going to judge. Great.
Yeah,
great.
I've never sent a knight home to horse for us. No.
Not once.
Yeah. I don't know if I can. Yeah. Or if I, you know, take up arms, like if we go to the Ren Fair and I challenge one, will they end up at parents' house?
Yeah, dude, and then we give them a gift.
Right. Anyway, at the end of these 5 years, it so happened that he was riding across a wilderness, fully armed as always, when he met three knights and as many as 10 ladies with them, their heads hidden in their hoods, all on foot, in hair shirts and barefooted.
What's a hair shirt?
It is a shirt made from human or horse hair.
Wait. Okay. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Human or horse hair?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now,
why?
I'm having trouble picturing this one.
Yeah.
I'm having a lot of trouble imagining a hair, a shirt made out of human hair. Is it like yarn? Is it yarny? Do you like patch up hair like yarn, or
not even like yarn? I mean, it's hard to, let me see,
imagine. Yeah,
yeah, a little bit, but it would have been woven, so it kind of looks like a shaggy-ish jacket.
Wow.
But it,
okay.
It is meant typically to be something that you do for penance. So like,
okay.
You wear it because it's not comfortable and it's itchy,
okay,
and it's irritating. And
I will say that's like, vegans like to think they're living a big game, but until you're wearing clothing made out of your own hair, you're not really conscious of the environment until you are literally clothed in your own droppings of one sort or another. That's a commitment. That's commitment to the bit. I'll give them that.
Yeah. So apparently there's a lot of different animal hairs you can use for this, but yeah, so
sure, but I don't
hair,
care
though.
About
yeah.
I don't care mm-hmm. about any of them but the yeah. humans. The human hair is the one that makes me go, whoa.
Yep.
Wow. All right.
The ladies, for the salvation of their souls, were doing their penance on foot for the sins they had committed, and were astonished to see him coming clad in armor and holding a lance and a shield. And one of the three knights stopped him and said, "My good dear friend, don't you believe in Jesus Christ, who laid down the new law and gave it to the Christians? Truly, it's neither right nor good, but very wrong to carry arms on the day when Jesus Christ died." And he, who had no sense of day or hour or time, so troubled was his heart, replied, "What day is it then?" "What day, sir? Don't you know? It's Good Friday, the day when a man should worship the cross and weep for his sins. For on this day, the one who was sold for 30 pieces of silver was nailed to the cross. He who was clean of all sins saw the sins with which the world was stained and bound, and became a man to save us from them. He was God and man truly, for the virgin born a son conceived by the Holy Spirit, in whom God assumed flesh and blood, so that the deity was housed in the flesh of man. That's certain. And those who won't believe it will never see him face to face. That
okay,
son,
yeah.
yep, and yep. That son born of the Virgin Lady, who assumed the form and the soul of man with his holy deity, truly, on this day he was nailed to the cross and freed all his friends from hell. It was a most holy death, which saved the living and brought the dead from death to life. With their spite, the false Jews, who should be put down like dogs,
oh boy,
themselves
oh boy,
great
oh boy,
harm,
oh boy, oh boy,
and us great good when they raised him to the cross, for they damned themselves and saved us all. Jesus, yeah.
Goodness.
Yep.
So, chill.
Not really, man.
Not at all.
Yeah.
That was clearly me being. It was a bit.
Wow. Yeah. Medieval.
Now, the
take
other
on
thing,
Jews.
when Jesus let his friends out from hell,
yeah,
is this another reference to that?
The harrowing of hell. Yes.
So, when did that stop being included in the Christian tradition? And what, for those of us who don't know of the tale, quick sum up.
Yeah, the harrowing of hell tells that essentially when Jesus is killed, he goes down into hell and kind of busts in and clears out all the souls of everybody there, which is, his because essentially there's a weird kind of, the people who died before now can't believe in Jesus, right? Like Moses,
sure,
and all the greatest hits of the Old Testament, right? And so this is a way to kind of dogmatically seal that loophole by like, oh, okay, Moses and all those guys, you know, the they're now saved, right? They're part of heaven because Jesus went down and took everybody out. So
and everyone.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some takes on that. And that's probably why it got taken out, because that you asked those questions, right?
Right, because the second
you mean
you
everybody,
say,
yeah.
And the
yeah.
second you say it's only his friends, that's not a very cool Jesus, right?
Right.
I'm doing a prison break, but only these guys.
Yeah, also yeah. This, we'll save it till the end. But, you know, like, why is this in here is a good question, but we'll get there. All who believe in him should be spending today in penitence. No man who believes in God should be carrying arms today, either in the field or on the road. Where have you just come from? Said Percival. From over there, sir, from a worthy man, a holy hermit who lives in this forest. He's such a holy man that he lives solely by the glory of God. In God's name, my lord, what did you do there? What did you ask? What were you looking for? What did we ask, sir? Said one of the ladies. We asked him for guidance from our sins and made confession, the greatest thing any Christian can do who wants to come to God. What Percival had heard made him weep, and he longed to go and talk to the worthy man. I'd very much like to go there, he said, if I knew the way. Sir, anyone who wants to go there should go straight ahead along the way we've come, through the thick, dense wood, and watch out for the branches that we knotted together as we came. We left such signs so that no one going to the holy hermit should lose his way. With that, they commended each other to God, and no more questions were asked. Percival set off along his path, sighing from the depths of his heart, for he felt he had wronged God, for which he was deeply repentant. He rode on, weeping right through the wood. When he came to the hermitage, he dismounted and disarmed and tethered his horse to an elm tree. Then he entered the hermit's cell. In a little chapel, he found the hermit and a priest and a clerk, this is the truth, who were beginning the highest and sweetest service that can be held in a holy church. Percival went down on his knees as soon as he entered the chapel, and the good man, seeing him so humble and weeping with tears streaming from his eyes to his chin, called him to draw near. And Percival, who deeply feared that he had sinned against God, clung to the hermit's foot and bowed down before him. And then, with joyous hands, he begged him to give him guidance, for he had great need of it. The good man told him to make confession, for he would never have remission if he did not confess and repent.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's healthy.
Exciting.
Very
exciting.
Healthy. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Sir, said Percival, fully 5 years ago, I lost my bearings and stopped loving God and believing in God. And since then, I've done nothing but ill.
Or like some sweet 60 or so night fights. You had to be there. They were pretty sick. Anyway.
Pretty cool. Yep. Oh, good friend, said the worthy man. Tell me why you did this and pray to God and have mercy on his sinner soul. Sir, I was once at the house of the Fisher King, and I saw the lance with the head that most certainly bleeds, but I asked nothing about the drop of blood I saw hanging from the tip of that white head. And truly, I've done nothing since then to make amends, nor do I know who was served from the grail that I saw there. And I've since suffered such grief that I would be gladly dead, for I've forgotten God because of it. And not once since then have I asked him for mercy, and I don't think I've done anything to earn it. Oh, my dear friend, said the worthy man, tell me your name. And he said, Percival, sir. At that, the worthy man gave a sigh, for he recognized the name, and said, Brother, a sin of which you know nothing has done you great harm. It's the grief you caused your mother when you left her. She fell to the ground in a faint at the foot of the bridge outside the gate, and she died of that grief.
What? God, yep. So many goddamn people just dying of grief. So many people just so grief. You know, that's a thing our culture doesn't have anymore. That's a thing that just doesn't happen that much anymore. It's just getting sad. Well, I guess it happens in a whole different way. I guess, oh boy.
Yep.
Oh boy. I just kind of opened that door in my mind. Is that what they're saying? Is that the...
Yeah, she just died of being sad, is what it seems like.
Yeah, but that seems a little suicide-y, right? Like, that seems a little...
I think the power of emotion to medieval people was something, although there is such a thing as the broken heart disease kind of thing. It happens to, like, old couples.
Sure.
People just kind of give up on life. The heart just stops working a couple days afterwards. And there are some studies that suggest that extreme sadness can actually have the same effect as physical pain, like the same neural receptors and pathways actually light up.
But, like, not once have I ever, like, seen a news report, like, at the 6 o'clock news, Joe Jackson just felt so sad he laid down and died. Like, not once. not once have I heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sad story, so.
So they don't cover sad stories, not the news.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, it could be a poetic device. There's a famous Kate Chopin story, The Story of an Hour, where...
You're acting like I'm smart. Go on.
Yeah, I'll summarize it quickly, but it's like Victorian times, and this woman, it starts out, and this person comes in and lets the family know that that her husband, the man of the house, has been killed in a train accident, right?
Okay.
And she gets sad for a while, but then she starts thinking, like, actually, this is great because, you know, married life, I've always wanted to be my own woman, you know, all that.
Okay.
And she gets, like, really excited that, you know, now she can actually live her life. And then she goes out, and there's been a mix-up at the station, and he's actually alive, and he comes into the door, and then she dies. And they said she died of heart problems, of a joy that kills.
Right. Okay. It's
a great ending line, but
sure.
So,
but the
maybe it did happen. I don't know if you had, like, a heart condition. Maybe she had a heart condition, and they didn't know it back.
And then. So did the mom. The mom died of sorrow too.
No, everyone, I think it's the same person.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's just the same.
That
one.
Makes sense. Yeah.
We just keep harping on it.
Yeah. Sure. Keep kicking that dead horse. All right.
Dead mom. Yeah. Yeah. So it was because of the sin you committed there that you came to ask nothing about the lance and the grail, and many misfortunes have befallen you because of that. And I tell you this, you wouldn't have survived this long if she hadn't commended you to God. But her prayer had such power that God has watched over you for her sake and kept you from being killed or captured. It was sin that stopped your tongue when you saw the lance head that never staunched its flow of blood, so that you didn't ask the reason. And folly seized you when you failed to learn who was served from the grail. The one who served from it is my brother.
Dang! Okay. Wow. So it's in the... Okay, great.
My sister and his was your mother.
What? So, wow, we're finding out so much. So Percival was the, like, son of royalty...
Or this guy, this holy guy?
This holy guy? Okay, great. All right. Wow.
Yeah, this is his uncle, essentially, yeah.
Okay. So the Fisher King's his uncle.
This is not the Fisher King.
No, but okay. So sorry. Yeah. I am confounding you get some clear... the person yeah. with this the is... spear.
Yeah, yeah. This is the person who's explaining to him why he couldn't say anything.
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
But he was the guy in the chapel.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That he had just gone to. Understand.
Yeah. So then as for the rich Fisher, which here you get some clarification.
Yeah, I knew he was in here somewhere. All right.
I believe he's the son of the king who is served from the grail.
Okay. Oh boy. Okay, go on.
Ultimately, it doesn't matter, Jan. Don't worry about it.
I'm trying to put it all together, but
so he's God the damn it, son it isn't of hard. The king served yep. from the grail.
He who begot. All right.
And don't imagine that he's given pike or lamprey or salmon. He's served with a single host, which is brought to him in that grail. So a host here means like a communion bread wafer.
Okay.
So this guy somehow magically eats on just
he just eats communion wafers
and lives on that. I think the idea is that, you know, it's the the full, you know, it's everything you need spiritually, right?
I have an ex that lived almost purely on like Ritz crackers.
Okay.
So well, I can actually similar. Kind of see this lifestyle, and yeah, it definitely keeps you thin.
Yeah. It comforts and sustains his life. The grail is such a holy thing. And he who is spiritual, that he needs no more in his life than the host that comes in the grail, has lived there for 12 years without ever leaving the chamber which you saw the grail enter. Now I want to direct you and give you penance for your sin. I want that with all my heart, good uncle, said Percival. Since my mother was your sister, you ought to call me nephew, and I should call you uncle and love you the more.
Wow. This is... The family lines are getting complicated. All right.
Remember when he met his cousin and she had...
And she... Yeah. And he didn't...
Yeah.
Yep. And he didn't even know her or... Yeah.
Yeah. She was the one that told him his name.
Yep. Incredible.
That's true, good nephew. But listen now. If pity has taken hold of your soul, repent in all truthfulness. And each morning, before you go anywhere else, go in the name of penitence to church, and you'll benefit greatly. Don't fail to do so on any account. If you're in a place where there's a minister, a chapel, or a parish church, go there when you hear the bell ring, or sooner if you're awake. It won't be to your disadvantage, but very much to your soul's improvement. And if Mass has begun, there'll be even more profit in being there. Stay there until the priest has said and sung it all. If you do this with a will, you may come to redeem yourself and win honor and a place in paradise. Love God, believe in God, worship God, honor worthy men and women, and stand up before priests. It's a service that costs little, and God truly loves it as a sign of humility. And if a girl or a widow or an orphan requests your help, grant it. I'll be the better for you. It's a most worthy charity, so you'll do well to give them your aid. Make sure you do so without fail. I'd have you do this for your sins if you want to recover all the virtues that you used to have. Now tell me if you'll do so. Yes, sir, most willingly. Then stay here with me, please, for 2 whole days, and in penitence eat such food as I eat. Percival agreed to all of this. Yeah. And the hermit, you're going to love this part. And the hermit whispered a prayer in his ear, repeating it to him until he had learnt it. Many of the names of our Lord appeared in this prayer, including the greatest ones, which the tongue of man should never utter, except
okay,
in fear
fucking
of death.
Super secret. Yeah, super yes. Secret language. Mordorian. Let's go.
Yeah,
let's
he's
go.
Got the names of God, dude.
Yeah,
the secret names of God.
Incredible. All right, go for it.
And when he had taught him the prayer, he forbade him ever to utter those names, except in times of great peril. I shan't, sir, said Percival. And so he stayed there and heard the service, which delighted him. And after the service, he worshipped the cross and wept for his sins. That night he ate as the holy hermit pleased, but there were only beets, chervil, lettuce, and cress, and millet, and bread made of barley and oats, and water from a clear spring, which all sounds delightful, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, a little too rustic for my taste, but
it's
that's
vegan-y.
Fine.
Yeah, but you put these together in a sandwich, man. That's like, you know, 1895.
Yeah, but they ain't talking
downtown.
No sandwiches. They're talking just grain.
They had bread made of barley and oats. You could put it together. And his horse had straw and a full trough of barley. Thus, Percival came to recognize that God received death and was crucified on the Friday. And at Easter, most worthily, Percival received communion. The story says no more about Percival for now. You'll have heard a great deal about Sir Gawain before I tell of him again.
Oh, God, this is like the worst thing a narrator can do is, but that's enough for one day. Let's move back over to, no, just do a meanwhile, because
yep.
I don't need to know when I'd rather be surprised. I'd rather be surprised. Just do a meanwhile.
Or just. Yeah, just straight cut. Like R.R. Martin, George R.R.
Yeah,
Martin.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
we're now following this
chapter's on this. Yep.
Yeah.
Sir Gawain, after his escape from the tower where the mob had attacked him, wandered on until one morning, between 9 o'clock and noon, he came riding up towards a hill and saw a tall and massive oak tree, thick with leaves, giving plenty of shade. He could see a shield hung on the oak, and beside it, a good straight lance. He hurried on toward the tree until he noticed a small dark palfrey beside it. He was astonished by this, for it did not seem right to him. Armed and a palfrey did not go together.
Okay, so he's got a warrior loadout, but a charger like a mount.
Yes. Sorry. So yes, exactly. Because the palfrey is like more of a rider.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. If it had been a charger, he would have supposed that some knight roaming the country in search of honor and glory had climbed the hill. But just then he looked beneath the oak and saw a girl sitting there who would have seemed most beautiful to him if only she had been happy and gay. But she had her fingers thrust into her tresses to tear out her hair and was going wild with grief.
What are tresses?
That's hair, long locks of a woman's hair.
Oh, okay. Okay, great.
Specifically okay, so... women's hair. I don't know why.
Okay,
in the
great.
Definitions I found, that's literally what it says.
Well, considering we're both very, very bald men, I'm going to have to take the haired people's opinion on the words that they use for it. Great.
Yeah. So let's see here. And tresses her hair. She was grieving for a knight and was kissing him over and over on the eyes and lips and forehead. Sir Gawain came closer and saw that the knight was wounded with many cuts to his face and a terrible sword wound in his head. And down both his sides, blood flowed in great streams. The knight had fainted many times from his pain and now finally lay still. And when Sir Gawain arrived, he did not know if he was dead or alive.
Okay, so she's holding like a bloodied and battered knight.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
How does dramatic. He seem? Yeah, it is pretty dramatic. Yeah. How does he seem to you, dear girl? He said. And she replied, "You can see his wounds are dangerous indeed. He'd die of the very smallest." "Dear friend," said Gawain, "wake him, please. I want to ask him about the affairs of this land."
Yeah. Now that's. That's main character energy. Yeah. That's main character energy. I don't give a shit where this NPC is at physically. Yeah. I need this dialogue tree to move my story forward. So you're gonna wake that fucker up so I can ask him where he's from. Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Gawain, I don't believe the narrator that we have switched characters from Percival to Gawain, but continue, please.
"I won't wake him, sir," said the girl. "I'd sooner be flayed alive."
He's dead.
"I've never loved a man so much and never will as long as I live. Now that he's sleeping and at rest, I'd be a wretched fool to disturb him." "Then truly I'll wake him if I can," said Sir Gawain. And swinging his lance around, he nudged him on the spur with the butt. It did not.
Okay, wow. Yeah, okay, yeah. Wow. Sure.
It does not give a fuck. It did not trouble the knight to be woken, for Sir Gawain shook his spur so gently that it did not hurt him.
Yeah. But everything else, he's literally got a sword hit injury on his fucking head.
Yep.
So what are you telling me? Like, he wakes up into abject pain.
Instead, the knight thanked him, saying,
"Okay, yeah. I guess I was picturing like a chunk out of his skull, but I guess he just okay." Continue.
"A thousand thanks, sir, for shaking me and waking me so kindly that I've suffered no harm. But for your own sake, I beg you." "Go no further. You'll be a fool if you do. Take my advice and stop here." "Stop? Why should I? I'll tell you by my faith, since you want to know. No knight who's ever gone that way by road or field has ever come back, for this is the border of Galvoy, and no knight can cross it and return." Okay.
Okay, sure. That so says, I mean, it is a, well, what I thought was a badly battered knight, but now I'm picturing that scene from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place where it's just a head in the middle of a room of gore, and the head says, like, you know, I don't think I'm gonna make it. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that's what I'm getting the vibes from him. He's just like a chipper corpse, essentially.
So no knight can go to Galvois, right? Or Galvois. I'm the only one who's ever done so, and now I'm in such a state that I don't think I can last till nightfall.
He's just talking like he's okay. Yep. Okay, sure. Why not?
For I met a knight, worthy and bold and strong and fearsome. I've never met one so valiant or tested myself against one so strong. That's why it's best if you turn back rather than cross this hill, for the return is hard and terrible. In faith, said Sir Gawain, I didn't come to go back again, which is a dope line.
Yeah.
It should be thought full cowardice in me if I turn back having taken this path. I'm going on until I see why no one can return. I can see it must be so, said the wounded knight. You'll go, for you're eager to enhance your honor. But I'd ask this of you if you'd let me. If God should grant you the honor which no knight has ever had, and I don't think any ever will, either you or any other, please return this way and see if I'm alive or dead, or better or worse.
I'm picturing him like you can see through his mouth as he talks. Like he has just a hole in the back of his head. Like he is just in a bad way and just chipperly chatting away with, all right, great.
And if I'm dead, then in the name of charity and the Holy Trinity, I beg you take care of this girl and see that she suffers no shame or harm. Please do so, for God never made or thought of making one more noble or kind-hearted. Sir Gawain granted his wish, promising that, if he were not prevented by capture or some other misfortune, he would return to him and give the girl such assistance as he could. With that, he left them and rode on without stopping, across plains and through forests, until he caught sight of a mighty castle, one side of which was a great seaport, with a fleet of ships to match. This noble castle was worth little less than Pavia, which is a famous city. On its other side lay vineyards, and beneath it flowed the great river, which girdled its walls all around and took its course right down to the sea, protecting the castle and the town on every side. So, to give you context too, Pavia is a city and both a region. Originally it was made in Rome, or conquered by Rome in 220 BC.
Yeah, but that's true of a lot of places, right?
It definitely is. Let me give you this one. Hold on, it's in Italy. See if I can. Sorry, one sec. All right. It's in, interestingly, the Lombardy region, or Lombardia, which is where the Lombards were also.
Okay. So that's where they would be. That's where they would be.
Yeah. It's in the northern part of Italy. And it was really important back in the medieval times, a rich city. So I think that's what it's trying to say. But the noble castle was worth little less than Pavia. So it's. Sir Gawain rode into the city over the bridge, and when he had climbed the strongest part of the city, he found, beneath an elm tree in a courtyard, a sweet girl, whiter than snow, looking at her face and lips in a mirror. She had made a crown around her head with a thin circlet of gold thread. Sir Gawain, yeah, right? Fancy. Sir Gawain gave his horse a spur and ambled up towards the girl, but she shouted to him, "Easy, sir, easy. Go gently now. You're riding like a madman. There's no need to hurry and wear out your horse. It's foolish to rush for nothing." "God bless you, girl," said Sir Gawain. "But tell me, dear friend, what were you thinking of, telling me to go easy for no good reason?" "Oh, I had good reason, knight. Truly I did, for I know exactly what you're thinking." "What's that?" he said. You want to take me and carry me off across the neck of your horse. True enough, girl. I knew it, she said.
Okay, wow. Flirting in the medieval ages is weird. Go on.
But curse the thinker of such a thought. You can forget about putting me on your horse. I'm not one of those simpletons that knights sport with and carry off on their horses when they go in search of chivalry. You'll not take me. And yet, if you dared, you could take me with you. If you'd risk fetching my palfrey from that garden, I'd go with you. And misadventure and hardship and grief and shame and mishap would befall you in my company.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's got a horse in a garden that she's telling him to go get.
Right.
But she says, if you get that, I'm going to go with you. And if I go with you, you're going to have all this bad stuff happening.
Bad stuff, sure.
Is anything needed but courage, friend? Said Gawain. All right. I don't think so, vassal, she replied.
Oh, dang. I mean, salty, this one.
Yep. Oh, dear girl, where shall I leave my horse if I go? He won't be able to cross the plank to the garden. No, knight. Give him to me and cross on foot. I'll keep your horse for you as long as I can hold him. But come back quickly, for I couldn't keep hold of him if you refused to be calm or if you were taken from me by force before you come back.
I mean, that's ominous, but
yeah, a little bit,
who's
right?
Taking him by whole force?
Yeah, and why, right?
Yeah. But,
that's true, he said. But I shan't hold you to blame if he escapes or is snatched from you, and I won't go back on that. So he gave her the horse and set off, but decided to take all his arms with him, for if there were someone in the garden who refused him the palfrey and forbade him to take it, there would be commotion and combat before he brought it back. And then, just as he crossed the plank, he saw a great crowd of people gathered together. They stared at him in dismay and cried, "May 100 demons burn you, girl, for being so wicked. May misfortune strike your body, for you've never shown love for a worthy man. You've sent so many to lose their heads. What a grievous shame. You mean to fetch the palfrey, knight, but you don't know the harm that'll befall you if you touch it. Oh, sir, why don't you turn back? Truly, you wouldn't come closer if you knew the shame and harm and trouble that'll befall you if you take the palfrey." So said all the men and women, desperate to stop Sir Gawain going to the palfrey and to make him turn back.
Okay, so a lot of drama about a horse.
Yep. And to her, right? Like, they sure seem to know her. He heard them quite clearly, but nothing was going to change his mind. He went up and greeted them, and they all returned his greeting, but in such a way that seemed to be in great anguish and distress. Then Sir Gawain stepped up to the palfrey and stretched out his hand, meaning to take it by the bridle, for it lacked neither saddle nor harness. When a great knight sitting beneath a lush green olive tree said, "It's no use trying to take the palfrey, knight. Don't lay a finger on it. It would be an act of the vainest pride. I don't want to forbid you or stop you if you're so eager to take it, but I advise you to be gone, for if you take that palfrey, you'll find a fearsome challenge elsewhere." "That won't stop me, sir," said Sir Gawain, "for the girl beneath the elm tree with the mirror sent me for it, and if I don't take it back with me, what shall I have gained by coming here? I'd be damned on earth as cowardly good for nothing." "Then you'll suffer for it, brother," said the knight. "For by God, the sovereign father to whom I hope to deliver my soul, no knight has ever dared take the palfrey and escape the grim fate of being beheaded."
Dang. Challenge accepted.
"I fear the same will befall you. I didn't mean you any harm when I forbade you to take it. You can do so if you wish, for neither I nor anyone here will stop you. But you'll be making a great mistake if you take it from this garden. I don't recommend it. It'll cost you your head." Sir Gawain would not linger a moment more. He drove the palfrey, whose head was black on one side and white on the other, straight across the plank. It had no trouble in crossing it, for it had done so and was well trained and schooled in it now.
Okay, so, real quick, can you explain? Okay.
I really He's on can't. A...
Yeah. Okay, I'm just I making know where you're sure going. Where we're trying to... I'm trying to build a mental picture here. Like, how would you prompt an AI to describe this, right? So it is...
It's described as a garden.
Right. and a plank.
There's like a plank of wood. Yeah, totally.
Going through the garden, which I imagine if you, it's like Minecraft, right? You make like little passageways in your garden so you can walk among the garden without stepping on shit. Okay.
Yeah, I think the plank helps you walk, like, it seems like across water, a place where.
Sure, something where it'd be hard, where a horse is going to have trouble. Okay. And for some reason, there's a lot of drama.
Well, there's also a crowd, which I don't understand where these people all live. Like,
well, I imagine it's pretty boring back then. and I imagine anyone showing up, literally anyone, would result in a crowd. So he has to take his palfrey, fancy walking horse, across this plank to something on the other side. I don't really understand what the objective is.
The girl asked for it and said if she brought the palfrey, she would ride with him, even though it'd be bad for him. So he's doing
right. I understand the whole foreboding element of it all. Right. I'm just having trouble. It's a garden.
Yep.
And there's a piece of wood going through it, which I imagine most horses would probably have trouble like keeping on, and that is what he is going through.
Sir Gawain took it by its silken rein and came straight to the elm tree where the girl was gazing at herself in her mirror. She had cast her mantle and wimple to the ground so that she could see her face and body freely.
How uncouth.
Yeah. Her a mantle is kind of cool. Let's see if I got one for you.
I know what the term means in rock climbing, but
does it mean in rock climbing?
It's mantling's like when you when you can get like both hands on an object and then push yourself up on it.
Gotcha.
That's a mantle sort of move.
Yeah, slightly different. if you see in this picture, hold on, I might have to. Oh, there you go. See this one on the right? The green part of clothing is a mantle.
Okay, so it's like a vest dress.
A loose sleeveless garment worn over other clothes.
Sure, it's but again, without sleeves, it seems.
Yep, sleeveless.
So it's a vest dress. It's the dress. Dress.
The best dress. Vest dress.
Of dress.
All right, let's see. So that was... wimple to the ground, see her face and her body freely. Sir Gawain presented the saddled palfrey to her and said, "Come now, girl, and I'll help you mount." "May God never let it be said," she replied, "in any court you may take me to, that you held me in your arms. If you ever held any part of me or touched it with your bare hand, I should think myself disgraced. It would be the worst that could befall me if you were ever known to have touched my flesh. I'd rather have my skin and flesh flayed down to the bone. I'll say that here and now. Leave me the palfrey at once. I can mount well enough by myself. I don't want your help. And God grant that I may see what I expect today. Great shame be following you before the day is out. Go where you will. You'll never touch my body or my clothes. But I'll follow you constantly until you've suffered some disaster, shame, and misfortune because of me. I know I'll make you come to grief. You can't escape it any more than death."
Wow. Ominous. Yeah. Ominous. Yeah.
Sir Gawain heard every word the haughty girl said, but he made no reply. He just gave her the palfrey, and she returned his horse. Then Sir Gawain bent down, meaning to pick up her mantle from the ground, and draped it around her. But the girl, who was never slow or timid in saying shameful words to a knight, watched him and said, "Vassal, what business have you with my mantle and wimple? By God, I'm not half as simple as you think. I've no desire to have you serve me, for your hands aren't clean enough to touch anything I wear on my body or my head. You
girl
shouldn't have..."
Girl boss! Yeah. What a girl boss! She's like, "I can do it."
"You shouldn't handle anything that touches my body, my mouth, my forehead, or my face."
Amen! Amen, lady! Hey!
"May God never honor me again if I ever accept your service in any way." So the girl mounted and donned and fastened her clothes herself and said, "Now, knight, go wherever you like. and I'll follow you everywhere until I see you disgraced because of me. And that'll be today, if it pleases God.
Huh? Okay.
Sir, yeah. You know.
Weird, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so in a medieval text, it's weird, huh?
Yeah, for sure. We've got like a Joan of Arc-y kind of character popping her way up. Love it.
Sir Gawain was silent, saying not a word in reply. He mounted, filled with shame, and they set off. And with his head bowed, he turned backward toward the oak where he had left the girl and the knight who sorely needed a doctor for his wounds.
Yeah, I've kind of forgot about that guy. Okay.
Yeah. Chrétien de Troyes didn't forget. Sir Gawain didn't forget. Sir Gawain knew more than any man about healing wounds.
Okay.
You didn't know that part about him, did you?
I didn't know he was the world's best doctor. Yeah. I certainly didn't. I did not know that. Wow.
Sir Gawain House. Yeah.
What a talented guy. He's the world's best doctor and a knight that's the best at tournaments. Wow, what a guy. I'm sure he actually knows how to launch rockets into the goddamn stratosphere. I'm sure.
No, he doesn't. He is the best
at sending rockets to space. Yep, the best there's ever been.
Yep, ever. Sir Gawain knew more than any man about healing wounds and saw an herb in the hedge grow, which was very good for taking the pain from a wound, and he went to pick it. Having picked the herb, he carried on until he found the girl beneath the oak tree, lamenting. And she said to him, as soon as she saw him, "Good dear sir, I think this knight is dead now, for he hears nothing anymore."
Wow.
So, yeah. Sir Gawain dismounted and found that the knight had a firm pulse, and his lips and cheek were not very cold.
Wow, so he knows. Okay, so pulses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are way old. Yeah, yeah.
Since
Greek, you know, more ancient than that. Shoot. I think people figured that one out pretty quick.
Sure. Yeah. But for that to be common, well, he's the best at medical knowledge.
Yeah.
I figured that one's
pretty common.
Pretty common.
Like,
wow.
When the beep beep stops.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay.
That one doesn't take too long. Yeah. Girl, he said, "This knight's alive, you may be sure, for he has a good pulse and strong breathing and no mortal wound. And I brought a herb that'll greatly help him, I think, and relieve some of the pain from his wounds as soon as it touches him. It's written that no finer herb can be set upon a wound, and that it has such power that if it were bound to the bark of an infected tree, then unless it were completely withered, the roots would recover, and the tree would return to leaf and flower. Your friend need fear death no longer, girl, once we've applied this herb to his wounds and bound it on, but we'll need a wimple of fine cloth to make a bandage."
Isn't a wimple an article of clothing?
Yeah, it's like a veil. So
they're going to make him a veil?
They're going to use it to make bandages.
Okay.
"I'll give you the one I'm wearing," she said, "without hesitation, for it's the only one I've brought."
And I like how he didn't decide this the first time he saw Bloody McKnight. Yeah, okay. No,
he's like, I'm going to go get that palfrey and then we'll see what's up.
And then come back and, oh boy, you're still bleeding out, huh?
And she took the wimple from her head, and it was very fine and white. And Sir Gawain cut the lengths required and bound the herb he was holding on all the knight's wounds, the girl helping as best she could. Sir Gawain stayed motionless until the knight gave a sigh and spoke, saying, "May God reward the one who has restored my speech, for I was greatly afraid of dying without confession. Demons came here in procession, seeking my soul. I dearly want to make confession before I'm buried. I know a chaplain near here, and if only I had a mount, I'd go and confess my sins and take communion. Once I'd done that, then I'd no longer fear death. But do me this service, if you will. Give me the pack horse of the squire who's trotting this way."
Okay.
Hearing this, Sir Gawain turned and saw a squire coming, of most unpleasant appearance. What was he like? I'll tell you.
Thank you.
His hair was red.
Oh, how unlikable. My God.
And tousled.
Oh, could you imagine the nerve?
And stood stiffly on end like the spines of an angry porcupine.
devilish, if you ask.
And his eyebrows were the same.
Oh, how could they not be?
And covered his face and nose right down to his mustache.
I'm sorry, his eyebrows covered yes. his face and no I have not once in my life have I thought, where do eyebrows begin and end? Because I'm pretty sure by the time you're at the nose, by the time you've made your way to a point anywhere on the nose, anywhere.
By the time you're at the nose,
yeah. That isn't an eyebrow anymore.
No,
that's just not an eyebrow anymore. Okay, so he's a Bigfoot. So Bigfoot yeah. has entered the battlefield. Okay.
His mustache was long and twisted. He had a great slit of a mouth and a wide beard, forked.
No, or was it an eyebrow? Who's to say? Who's to say?
Forked and curled, and a short neck. And a swollen chest. Sir Gawain was keen to go and see if he could have the pack horse. But first he said to the knight, God help me, sir. I don't know who this squire is, but whoever he may be, I'd rather give you 7 chargers if I had them here to hand than his pack horse. I tell you, said the knight, he's intent on only one thing, to do you harm if he can. Sir Gawain went to meet the squire and asked him where he was going. And the squire, being far from amiable, replied, Vassal, what business is it of yours where I'm going or where I'm from? Whatever my path may be, I wish ill fortune on your body. At that, Sir Gawain gave him just deserts, striking him with his open palm and his arm being armored.
No, Sir Gawain just slapped Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Insult.
Yeah, absolutely, right? His arm being armored and his will to strike keen, he toppled him and emptied his saddle. And when the squire tries to rise, he staggered and fell down flat again. He fell 7 times or more, I jest not, in less space than the length of a pinewood lance. When he did get up again, he said, You hit me, vassal. Indeed I did, said Gawain, but I've not done you much harm. I'm sorry I hit you, before God, but you spoke most offensively. Well, you'll pay for it, and I'll tell you how. You'll lose the hand and the arm that dealt me that blow, for it'll never be forgiven you.
Cool. So I'm going to fucking chop off your arm.
Yep.
Cool. All right.
Or it's a prophecy.
Oh.
While this was happening, the wounded knight's heart, which had been so weak, returned to him. And he said to Sir Gawain, Leave that squire, good sir, for you'll never have an honorable word from him. Yes, you do best to leave him now, but bring me his pack horse, and take this girl here beside me. Fasten the girths of her palfrey, and help her to mount, for I don't want to stay here any longer. I'll mount the pack horse if I can, and look for somewhere to make confession. I shan't stop until I've confessed and taken communion and received the last sacrament. Sir Gawain took the pack horse at once and gave it to the knight. His sight had now returned and cleared, and he saw Sir Gawain and recognized him for the first time. And Sir Gawain took the girl, and like the kind and courteous knight he was, set her upon the dark palfrey. And while he was seating her upon it, the other knight took Gawain's horse and mounted, and began to send him charging hither and thither in all directions.
Wow, so Bigfoot's charging Gawain.
No, Bigfoot is still on the ground. That's the squire. The okay. knight that was beaten up took Gawain's horse.
Okay.
Yeah.
The severity of his injuries is fluctuating.
Yeah, he got
I guess adrenaline. I guess
the plant, man.
Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah. You got the flower, dude. Medipack.
Oh, and yeah,
natural
sure.
Natural remedy. Just spam
right
a couple
up.
Of those,
yep.
dude. Your health bar just.
Right, yep.
Yeah. As long as you got a couple of hit points, you know, 1 hit point, technically, full action.
You could still go. Yeah, sure. Yep.
Sir Gawain saw him galloping about the hill and laughed in amazement. But as he laughed, he said, By my faith, Sir Knight, you're foolish to make my horse leap about like that. Dismount and give him to me, for you could easily hurt yourself and reopen your wounds. But he, the knight, replied, Hold your tongue, Gawain. You'd better take the pack horse, for you've lost the horse. I like the way he goes, and I'm taking him with me for my own. What? I come here to help you, and you do me wrong? Don't you dare take my horse, for it would be treachery. Gawain, whatever it might cost me, I'd like to tear your heart from your belly with both hands.
Okay, I think he's a little confused as to how anatomy works. The heart typically doesn't hang out in the belly, but I'll give him a pass. It's the medieval ages.
Yeah, it's easier than going through the ribs, but...
Oh, God, no, yeah. You got to go through up. There's more meat in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to make a left turn, too? Oh, it's the worst.
True. This reminds me of a proverb, Gawain replied. Do some men a good deed, and your neck will bleed.
Huh? Oh, okay. God. Sure?
I'd like to know why you'd have my heart, and why you're taking my horse, for never in my life have I wished or done you any harm. I don't think I've done anything to deserve it, for I've never seen you before, to my knowledge. Yes, you have, Gawain. You saw me and did me a great disgrace. Don't you remember the man you tormented by forcing him against his will to eat with the dogs for a month, with his hands tied behind his back? I tell you that was a foolish deed, and now you're paying for it.
Wait, is this Sir Kay?
Nope.
Okay.
Close, though. Are you then Griorius, who abducted the girl and had your way with her? Yet you knew full well that in King Arthur's land, girls are protected. The king has given them a safeguard and watches over them and ensures their safe conduct. I can't believe that you hate me or seek to do me harm for what I did to you, for I did it for the sake of justice, which is established and imposed throughout the king's land.
Good for you, yeah. Gawain. Hey, yeah.
This guy was a rapist, the other guy.
Sure. Yeah.
Gawain, you exacted justice upon me. I remember that well. And now you must suffer the justice that I'll extract. I'm taking Gringolet, for that's the best revenge I can have for now. And you'll have to change to the pack horse from which you have toppled the squire, for there's no other swap you can make. With that, Griorius left him and raced off after his sweetheart, who was riding swiftly away, and he followed her with all speed.
Wow. And Gawain's just watching this go down. Okay. Yep.
And the evil girl laughed at Sir Gawain. Remember the one that was following him?
Yeah.
And said, oh, vassal, what are you going to do? It may well be said of you now. There's one born every day. God save me. It's great fun trailing you. I'll gladly follow wherever you go. If only the pack horse you've taken from the squire were a mare. I tell you, I wish it were, for your disgrace would be greater still.
Okay, so she's the old guys. Waldorf and Grimwald, or whatever their names are from the Muppet Show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She is just following Gawain and occasionally going, oh, this is the best show I've ever seen, a show where you fail. Oh, she is just being the negative commentary, the troll. A troll is just following him, barking their criticisms at him. Yep. Sick. Sick.
That's exactly what's happening.
I love it. I love it. This is more progressive than I would have figured from medieval times.
Then Sir Gawain, having no choice, mounted the stupid trotting pack horse.
Great. I'm glad the term stupid still in use. Yeah. Okay.
It was a most ugly beast with a thin neck and a fat head and long limp ears. And
I mean, sounds cute to me.
Yeah, all the imperfections of age. Its lips sagged a full finger's length apart. Its eyes were cloudy and dim. Its hooves covered in sores, and its flanks were hard and slashed by spurs. It was long and thin, with a skinny rump and bent spine. The reins and headpiece of the bridle were made of thin cord, and the saddle, which had seen better days, had no blanket. And the stirrups were so short and weak that he did not dare put his weight in them.
Dear medieval authors, we don't need this. We don't need. There's action currently happening. The further we drift away from the action, immediately, you set up these details before the action happens. That way your action scene can carry out as one cohesive narrative. Right now, it's just start and stop. We're just hitting the gas, hitting the brake, hitting the gas, hitting the brake, hitting the gas. All right. either hit the gas or the brake. Go for it.
Let's see. It's only right that I should follow you. Oh, truly, cried the girl, plaguing him. Things are turning out well. I shall be glad indeed to go where you like. It's only right that I should follow you willingly for a week or a fortnight or 3 weeks or a month. For you're finely harnessed and mounted on a splendid charger. Yes, you look just like a knight who should escort a girl. Oh, what pleasure I shall take in seeing your misfortunes. Give your horse a bit of a spur and test him. But watch out, he's like lightning. Oh, yes, I'll follow you. For understand, I'll never leave till disgrace has truly befallen you, as it surely will.
I mean, legit, she's just trolling him. She's just being a 1,000% a roaming troll comment that is just appearing in his feed every 20 seconds. I love that. I have met my favorite character of this, and she doesn't have a name because names are fucking meaningless. Yeah. I love this character. I love an audience member who is just now riding along. They're making their opinion known in the story.
And he replied, "Dear friend, you may say what you like, but it isn't right for a girl to speak so impolitely when she's more than 10 years old. She should be well-mannered and courteous and polite if she's bright enough to learn."
Yikes. Okay.
"What, you want to teach me lessons, do you, Sir Knight of Misadventure? I don't want your instruction. Ride on and hold your tongue, for you're equipped now as I wanted you to be." And so they rode on till evening, and neither of them said a word.
I love the tension between them. Yep. I picture her smoking cigarettes. I picture her living large.
And so they rode on till evening, and neither of them said a word. Sir Gawain went ahead, and she rode behind. He did not know what to do with his pack horse, for he could not get a canter or a gallop out of it, however hard he tried. It went at a walk, whether he liked it or not.
Okay, so it's just, yeah, even the horse is being a dick to him.
It's, yep.
This is the first time I've actually kind of liked the story.
Yeah, when you were talking about flaws and stuff, I was I like the fact that
this lady has introduced like some negativity to the plot line.
And Sir Gawain isn't perfect here.
Yeah, right? he's having to overcome something. My God, could you imagine? Yeah.
He's not just immediately the best.
Yeah. Right?
For if he dug in his spurs, he had a dreadful ride. It shook up his inside so much that he could not bear to have it go faster than walking pace. So on he rode upon the pack horse through wild and lonely forests until he came to a flat land beside a deep river, so wide that no sling of mangonel or catapult could have thrown a stone across.
What's a sling of mangonel?
Yeah.
That totally sounds like a D&D item. That's straight out of that's Mordenkainen, right? Mangonel's the same. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm picturing a giant slingshot.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, I can show you how this works through a...
It's a trebuchet. It predates the trebuchet.
A
classic catapult.
Yes, but this one's man powered. So you see how there's one, there's that lever.
Okay,
you would pull that, and it's torsion based. Okay. So you are winding a string along this
board. You're like pulling a string,
exactly, and it's wrapping around it along the log, exactly, yeah. And that pulls the. These things were made out of English oak, so they probably would have been pretty sturdy, you know. But it does say, and here I'll stop sharing.
Visually, it looks like a classic catapult. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Visually, it 100% looks like a catapult. It had usually a sling on top, although they could have baskets, and they were used in ancient use. They were the primary siege weapons in the 12th and 13th century. It was replaced as the primary siege weapon in the 12th and 13th century by the counterweight trebuchet.
Yeah, sure.
But before that, it was used, and it was faster than the onager, Which is another type of catapult, which is torsion powered. Yeah, so there you go. But interesting what a mangonel is. So kind of just lost weapons, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just stuff that they included at the time because it was relevant. It's like saying an F-16 now, whereas I imagine in 100 years what a niche reference, right? Like, wait, right. A specific type of warplane? What?
Yeah. And not to mention that, you know, it's not very long after this, you know, once the trebuchet gets in there, it's dethroned pretty quickly by the cannon.
I can only imagine. Oh, yeah. For sure. Oh, you know, for sure.
Like, it's not. And once the cannon comes in,
once,
you know,
gunpowder enters the arena, yeah, everything changes. Yeah.
There's cannons now, but they're just kind of shitty, dude. At least the European ones, you know. They're why, you know, they explode. They're just not great. So anyway, this thing, that's how big the river is, right? So no sling of mangonel or catapult could have thrown a stone across, and it was beyond the range of any crossbow. On the other side, a castle stood, overlooking the river, very well appointed and very strong and very rich. I've no desire to tell a lie. The castle was built upon a cliff. And so splendidly.
Why would you lie about that? That's so weird.
It's so strange.
That's so weird.
So splendidly that no living man's eyes have ever beheld so fine a fortress. Maybe that's the lying part.
Sure.
There was a great hall set upon a sheer rock, built entirely of gray marble. And in the hall were a good 500 open windows, all filled with girls and ladies gazing out before them at the meadows and flower gardens.
Okay. Wow.
Yep. Many of the girls were dressed in samite. If you remember, that's a rich silk with silver and gold.
Okay. Sure.
And most treasures. Most wore silken gowns of different colors, all brocaded with gold. And brocade is something we still use. People still buy them all the time. It's when you have a pattern in a fabric that's raised on the original thing that's woven in.
Oh, okay. Sure. Like a textured. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty popular, but it was popular back then. If you look at like the royal stuff that they're wearing in Games of Thrones, a lot of the time, those smoking jackets, actually, I've seen people wear those modern.
Sure. Sure.
Is, the guy from The Weeknd wears one, I think, in that Blinding Lights video. So they're really popular. If you type in brocade jacket to Google, you could probably
find celebrities. Being worn.
100%. Yeah. Sure. You wouldn't get medieval examples at all. Yeah. It would just be celebs wearing them because they look fancy. There they leaned at the windows, and from outside they could be seen from the waist up with their shining heads and their comely bodies. Wow. The most evil woman in the world, who was now riding ahead of Sir Gawain, came straight down to the
river. My favorite. I hope she gets a name. I know she won't because she's property at this time, but she's my favorite character.
She's
my
really
favorite
great.
Character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, she has somehow some agency and authority to just talk shit.
Yeah. The fact that everyone's just letting her fucking talk shit about this guy. Yeah. Yeah. Love it.
And
love
not,
it.
You know, like people have been punched for less in this story.
Like, oh my God. People have been,
not even elsewhere in this story.
People have gotten a fucking javelin to the face for half as much as what she opened with. So yeah,
the squire was like, I don't want to tell you where I'm going and I want you to leave, and then Gawain slapped the shit out of him.
Yeah,
you know. She stopped there and stepped down from the little mottled palfrey, and on the bank she found a boat which was fastened and padlocked to a stone.
Oh boy, do they have padlocks? I mean, clearly they
do.
I'm
glad you asked. Yeah. So padlocks go back to Greek days. So we're talking, like 0 BC. But in those days, it's more of like the pin system, right? Like it's like a basic manacle with a pin that you can tie.
Pretend like I'm even dumber than you think I am. How is this lock working?
So this one might actually be a lock as we more commonly understand it, because I found Swedish spring locks that are as early as 1000 CE.
Oh, I'm still probably too dumb for this conversation. So does it It does it take a key? I imagine it takes a key.
Yes. So the spring locks definitely would have had a key. We're not like thinking like fully, like combos and that kind of stuff.
Sure. But a key to a thing that could lock a thing
that was
has existed until the Greek era.
No, not that kind. Okay. Because what they would have had is a more mechanical type. So what that was like, a manacle is like, think of the really old school cartoons where they had like the ball and chain thing.
Sure.
So they attach that to your leg and then they put a pin through that locks your leg in.
Okay. Yes.
And then
yes.
they have another device, which is typically like something that you can bend or unbend, which locks it, quote unquote.
Yeah, sure.
And so
sure.
You would need, instead of a key, you need a special tool to kind of
to unlock it. Okay, great. That you had to reason with the cartoon side of my mind.
It's kind of hard to visualize now that I think about it, because it's not, the basic, even the basic key would have been more like a tool in this time period.
Okay.
You know, it would have been like a special, it would have looked like a key maybe, but you know, essentially it's like, it's moving a mechanism inside the lock that's big and primitive.
Yeah, sure.
So it would be heavy, you know, they would be much bigger than what we're
like
used
to. European hotel key where they're just big and elaborate. Yeah. And
you're like, wow. Okay. Yeah. Let's go here. Where was the padlock? Oh, padlock to a stone. But there was a paddle in the boat, and on the stone lay the key to the lock. So the evil-hearted girl climbed into the craft and led her palfrey in after her, as she had done many times before.
Okay, so she's leading her horse into the boat.
Yes.
Okay, great.
As she had done many times before, what does that tell you?
That she's led other knights to this state?
Okay, so let's see what happens. Vassal, she cried, dismount now and climb in here with me, along with your pack horse. It's as skinny as a chicken. And take up this boat's anchor, for you'll be in a sorry plight if you don't cross this river quickly or can't swim fast. What, girl? Why? You haven't seen what I can see, knight. If you had, you'd flee with all your speed. Sir Gawain looked round then and saw a knight coming across the meadow, fully armed. And he asked, if you don't mind, friend, tell me who that knight is. He's riding my horse, stolen from me by that traitor whom I healed of his wounds this morning. I'll tell you by Saint Martin, the girl said cheerfully, but you may be sure I wouldn't tell you for all the world if I thought it would be to your benefit. But since I'm certain he's coming for your misfortune, I shan't hide it from you. He's Grioria's nephew. He sent him after you. And I'll tell you exactly why, since you've asked. His uncles ordered him to track you to your death and to take him back your head. That's why I advise you to dismount and climb in here and flee, unless you want to die right there. So Griorius was the guy that...
that he healed up, right?
Yep, exactly. Yep.
But...
the rapist.
Gawain's literally iced everyone he's come in contact. I'm sure he's not worried about this guy. Like, this isn't a big threat.
Yeah, I certainly won't flee because of him, girl. I'll wait for him.
Good. At least you're consistent, bud.
Well, truly, I shan't stop you, she replied. I'm saying nothing. Oh, what a fine charge. What a gallop you'll make in front of those beautiful girls up there leaning at the windows. They're only there because of you. It's because of you they've come. So charge. They'll love it. With you mounted on the mighty charger, you look just like a knight who should be jousting with another. Whatever it may cost me, girl, I'm not going to shirk this. I'm going out to meet him, for I'd be overjoyed if I could win back my horse. And with that, he headed back to the meadow and turned the head of his pack horse towards the knight, who was spurring across the sandy riverbank. Sir Gawain prepared to meet him and braced himself so firmly in his stirrups that he snapped the left one clean off.
Oh, that's probably going to be a problem.
So he let the right one go and just waited for the knight. The pack horse would not move. For all his spurring, he could not make it stir. Alas, he cried, a pack horse is no mount for a knight when he wants to do combat. And meanwhile, the knight was spurring toward him on Gawain's own horse, and it wasn't one to hobble. And he gave Gawain such a blow with his lance that it bent like a bow and snapped clean across, leaving the head in his shield. And Sir Gawain struck him on the top half of his shield, and with such force that it smashed clean through both shield and mail coat, and brought him crashing down in the fine sand. Sir Gawain reached out and took hold of his horse and jumped into the saddle. This adventure was so sweet to him, and his heart was so filled with joy that he had never felt so happy in his life.
He yep, rode. He wins. Cool. Yep. All right. Cool. He faced a knight lower level than himself.
Yeah. It was a nephew of the knight that he won. Yeah. So yeah, that should tell you also that, this is trash.
A nephew? Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. A brother's? No less.
Yeah.
That's where the revenge lines lie. Sure.
Right. Yeah. He rode back to the girl who had climbed into the boat, but there was no sign of either boat or girl. He was most displeased at losing the girl. He did not know what had become of her. And that, Jan, is where we're going to call it.
Wow. Okay, so Gawain turns around and the most evil woman on the earth, the only funny, relatable character in this story, has vanished on the boat.
Yes.
Wow. That is correct. Wow. Wowee.
Yeah.
All right.
And Jan, I can tell you for pretty certain. In fact, yeah. The next episode will be our final.
Wow. So we actually, because we are no closer Percival. To the fucking grail than we were three episodes ago. Like, we were so close to the grail that we saw it. We literally saw it.
Yep. I will say no more, except to say that we'll be officially done with the Grail. We might do a recap episode. We might not.
Yeah, I mean, something to, because, oh, man, I'm forgetting details left and right. It's an insane story.
So plot heavy. So, yeah.
All medieval stories are insane and just ramble. But, yeah.
It is like a modern anime, where they just continue to introduce characters and combat until you've lost track of everybody.
Sure. This is Inuyasha on drugs. Yeah.
Yep. 100%. Or that other one. What's the Inuyasha was long. Oh, why am I blanking out? Bleach. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Sure.
Yeah. Bleach was a good one, man. They had a bajillion. One Piece, I heard, is up there right now.
Yeah. I don't have the life to jump into it, you know?
Just insanity. Sure. Yeah. So love that community, but, they would roll with these stories. No problem.
Sure.
They wouldn't even blink an eye. It'd be like, when's the weird stuff going to happen? So, all right, man. That was fun.
Oh, an absolute blast. Thank you again, Marcel. Thank you, internet, for listening to us bark at each other about things from yesteryears.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.